Heavenly Father, let us extend our thoughts in union as we work to enrich the lives of our residents. Let our deliberations be free of rancor and filled with the concern of others rather than ourselves. Let us plan beyond the obvious that we might protect our neighbor from the unintended consequences of the shallow thought. Let us remember that we are the people's servant, not they ours. Let us proceed in peace. Amen.
Thank you for coming to my rescue.
Good morning. I would like to call this morning's adjourned September meeting for October 20th, 2020 to order. May I have a roll call, please?
Message.
Present.
Ms. Flowers.
She will not be here today.
Mr. Gangler.
Here.
Giles.
He will not be here.
Ms. Gilmore.
Here.
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 Kellogg. Mr. Prochaska.
Here.
Ms. Vickers.
Here.
Thank you. With a quorum present, may I have a motion to approve the agenda as written?
Second.
By Hendricks, seconded by Gilmore. Discussion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Special recognition. May I have a motion to approve a resolution declaring October as Manufacturing Month?
Second.
Motion by Kellogg, seconded by Hendricks. Any discussion on this item? I think it's one of those. Scott, do you want to talk about our involvement with manufacturing for a minute?
Yeah, we've for the past few years we've approved a resolution adopting for Manufacturing Month, and it just shows the county's willingness and wanting to work to bring manufacturing and improve upon it and keep the manufacturing that's in the county in the county.
Thank you. Any other comments? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Next, may I have a motion to approve a resolution declaring November as National Epilepsy and Sudden Unexpected Death and Epilepsy Awareness Month.
So moved.
Second.
By Hendricks, seconded by Gilmore. Discussion on this item? Ms. Hendricks.
I just want to say my college roommate had epilepsy, and it's hard to envision how much it really affects people's everyday life, and it does. And more than that, it actually strips a lot of opportunity from people with epilepsy. So the more awareness, the better. Thank you.
And this is something that we've had an employee who had family member that brought this to our attention, you know, many years ago now, and so I'm glad that we continue to recognize it. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Public comment. First up, Todd Milliron, and you will have 5 minutes. If you could just say your name for the record once you get up there. Looking very dapper today as well.
Todd Milliron, Yorkville. I'm here to speak about agenda item D, 9D. This proposed raise on today's agenda is a 4% raise for salary only for 12/1/2020. That is not excluding the expense of Mr. Koppel's total compensation package. Then another 4% raise for 12/1/2021. Then another 4% raise for 12/1/2022. Then another 4% raise for 12/1/2023. And the December 1st option is only a 3% increase. Mr. Koppel's present salary is $133,251. Mr. Koppel's county paid dental costs the county $819. Mr. Koppel's HSA costs the county $3,000. Mr. Koppel's health insurance costs the county $14,789. The county's contribution for Mr. Koppel's Social Security is $8,261.56 annually. Likewise, the Medicare contribution is $1,932.14. And then we have the IMRF. That's another contribution from county taxpayers of $12,392.34, which equals a total compensation package of $174,445.04. What I'd like to know is what happened to in the budget process, and I was here for all those meetings, that everybody else was getting 2.5%. Debbie's department was held to that. Jill's department was held to that. The highway department was asked to make their own contribution for their health insurance. There was many sacrifices that were being made to get that budget where it's at, and presently it's still not balanced. We're a lot closer thanks to the health insurance renewal offer and a big dividend or discount that was provided. But Scott, I like you and I think you're doing a good job. You're probably being asked to do more in this pandemic. There's now many that do not have a job, cannot make the rent or pay their mortgages, and may be in the food line at our food pantry on Thursdays. Scott, please lead by example. Tell this board today it's time to be, not a time to be giving a raise. I suggest you accept my citizen offer and accept our county citizens franchise tag. Let's just roll over your compensation package for another year. This can wait at least 12 months or when we're out of this pandemic and times are more back to normal. Maybe then, since you are a team player, we can talk about a 4% raise. I do feel this raise is much different than the coroner's raise, which was 21% that she received in June 2020. I was also on the agenda and spoke against that raise in June. I'm not speaking against your raise. I'm just asking you to be a team player. Lead by example, and your leadership can be the foundation for future negotiations, not only for you, but other elected offices and bargaining units. No raise, not now. We're all in this together, and now is not the time to be handing out any more big raises. Thank you.
There are some people on the line, Chairman. I don't know if anybody on the remote call has public comment, but there are several people on today.
Thank you. Is there anyone on the line that has public comment? Did we get any letters this time, Scott?
Nothing since the last meeting, Chairman.
Thank you. May I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Yes.
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 Prior to new business, for the purpose of
compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the public body, C1. C2, collective negotiating matters between the public body and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees. And 11, litigation when an action against, affecting, or on behalf of a particular public body has been filed and is pending before a court.
Thank you. Have a motion
to that. So moved. Second.
Kellogg, seconded by Sesich. Roll call.
Mr. Engler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
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 All ayes, thank you. And please remove everything from the room. And Fran, you can stick around for a minute. I think. Okay. We are back in regular session for the adjourned September meeting of October 20th, 2020. Next item up, I have a motion under new business. For the ratification and approval of collective bargaining agreement between Kendall County, Illinois, the Kendall County Sheriff, and the Illinois Fraternal Order of Police Labor Council, Correction Sergeants and Court Service Sergeants Bargaining Unit, effective December 1, 2019 through November 30th, 2024.
All moved.
Second.
By Sesich. Any discussion on this item? Roll call.
Yes.
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 Ayes, motion carries. Next, may I have a motion to approve the resolution a resolution approving the IDPA COVID-19 testing events.
So moved.
Motion by Hendricks, seconded by Vickers. And this is to allow for additional testing events at the health department parking lot, as we had a very successful turnout last week. And we have to have this agreement in order to allow for the IDPH to be over there. There is not any Kendall County staff involved in this, is that right? It's just IDPH. Do you want to talk for a second, Rhianna, about it? Thank you.
Correct. There's no Kendall County staff that are involved in this, very, very minimal. It is our parking lot space, and it is facilities giving us a few cones to put up just to kind of guide the traffic. And I set out the cones, and I pick up the cones. They leave nothing overnight. So it's 4 days in advance. And in talking with Scott Koppel and moving forward, maybe we'll be looking to see if Jim Webb could create some kind of a document or agreement that may be like a blanket agreement. So over such a period of time that we would have so many different events or different days, so that in the event that we had an outbreak of any sort, we can get testing here immediately and not have to worry about going through the process. So I'd like to just see something maybe through June and just list out a number of days that could be possible underneath that agreement.
Each time we've done this, our timing has worked out just barely with having meetings. So I would be in favor of that too, if there's a way for us to do this, just so that they can come back over a period of time.
Yeah, and it depends on IDPH's schedule. They'll just, send an email and say, hey, we have testing mobile sites available. Are you guys interested? And then the turnaround is we just do this race and try to get everything signed. And if we can just avoid that, that would be great. And then that way, too, like I said, if we have an outbreak and we want to get testing into a facility or somewhere, we know we can just promote that. If we know the dates are upcoming, we can just move forward with it and have a lot of participation.
Great. And this specific one is then for November's 2nd, 3rd, 7th, and 8th?
Yes, so that's correct. So we have two during the week, and then we're going to do on Saturday and Sunday from 8 to 4. So we will have personnel in the building. The building will be locked, but we'll have personnel there. So we have people on site that are just going to flex their time with that week, and we'll do four-hour shifts. But we will be available to have people come out and get tested throughout the weekend, 8 to 4, which is important because these last days that we did, the 3 days that we did, was 8 to 4 on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and people, those are working hours, so hopefully we can get more numbers in.
Yeah, Ms. Hendricks.
What would be involved? Are we capable of changing this to a blanket agreement now? Or what would be involved in putting that forward to get a blanket agreement for testing with the state, like you just mentioned? I'll make the motion to change it today to a blanket agreement.
We cannot do it today.
Okay.
Do it today, but we can come up with one for your next meeting that would have a more general times that would be set by agreement. Probably Director Rayanne Van Gundy would be the actual person that would make that decision of the dates in conjunction with IDPH, but then it wouldn't have to go back to the board each time.
I think that would be key because everything, our economy, our local economy, all of our business owners, the schools, everything turns on testing. It all turns on testing, and we've known that for quite some time. So I think I would like to suggest that we work on that toot suite, which means right now.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, motion carries. All ayes. And then we'll work on that for the November meeting if we can. Scott?
Just a quick note, the testing that is in this resolution goes past the next county board meeting the day after the election, so we should be just fine to be able to get something then.
Okay. Thank you. All right, next item. May I have a motion to approve the county administrator job description?
So moved.
Motion by Hendricks, seconded by Vickers, and I don't know if Scott, you want to talk about this, even though it's your description, or you want Leslie to? Can she help with it, or?
There's some small adjustments from the previous job description that was approved a couple of years ago. Leslie did work on it, so if there's any questions or comments, I'd be happy to talk about it as well. That adds in some of the newer things that I've done as far as working with the lobbyist and efforts in Springfield, and just updated to reflect the work that's happening now.
Leslie, did you have anything you wanted to add?
No.
Okay. Ms. Hessage?
No.
Mr. Kelly?
I was going to ask, does this include the additional responsibilities that Scott has taken on or we've given him of overseeing the EMA director position and role, hiring, union negotiations, increased economic development, and also lobbyists? Are those all included or?
Yeah, some were already part of the job description as far as like managing department heads, but there is a new department head, and then it does include the other changes were necessary. Yes.
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 Message?
Yes.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Yes.
All ayes. Motion carries. Thank you. Next up, may I have a motion to approve the employment agreement between Scott Keppel and County of Kendall, Illinois, effective December 1st, 2020 through November 30th, 2023, with an optional one-year automatic renewal with a base salary of $138,581, effective December 1, 2020, $144,124 effective December 1, 2021, $149,889 effective December 1, 2022, and $154,386 effective December 1, 2023, if the 1 year renewal option is exercised.
Second.
Hendricks, discussion on this item. Ms. Hendricks.
I just want to address some of the concerns that were brought up earlier. Mr. Kellogg, are these salary increases included in the budget? And have they been planned for before this year? In other words, we've planned for this in our budgeting, correct?
For
salary increases in keeping with our contract with Mr. Keppel.
For 21? That's on budgeting.
Right.
Yeah, it's in the 21.
Thank you. Thank you. And how many people does Mr. Keppel directly supervise?
I don't know.
I directly supervise all the department heads and Latrice Caldwell in administration as the deputy administrator.
In addition to that, don't you do economic development work as well as all the work that the board sends to you?
Yeah, we don't have an economic development person right now, so I serve as economic development staff alongside TPMA is helping out with COVID-specific economic development.
Would you agree, Mr. Keppel, that your job description is quite lengthy and very detailed?
It's a very long job description.
Questions I have. Thank you.
I just wanted to say that I do have the utmost confidence in the job our administrator is doing. We did discuss something earlier in executive session, and there is one clause in the contract that is going to lead me to vote no, but it's not a vote of no confidence in the administrator. It is just a procedural hang up I have with a clause in there. But I have the utmost confidence in the job that the administrator is doing.
I know where Mr. Prochaska stands on, you know, I think on rules and things like that. So I'm glad that he said that because I think, you know, sometimes when you vote no on something, it's because it's included in the entirety of, you know, that bill or that contract or something like that. And it's nice to see that he at least lets Mr. Keppel know that, you know, obviously we have all the confidence in the world in him, even though we don't agree on one particular item.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
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 Yes. Motion carries 7-1. Thank you. Elected official reports and other department reports. Sheriff. Morning.
Yes, good morning. I just, I know my monthly report was given to the LJL, and we've had a couple busy weeks. Last night I attended the Lisbon City Council or Village meeting for some questions about an incident that we had down there. We've also been pretty busy working with the AG's office and the state attorney's office on some other cases. So I don't know if anybody had any questions of the sheriff's office right now. And I also would have a statement about working with Mr. Keppel. I've worked for several village administrators throughout my 29 years, and almost 20 in a lead position in law enforcement. And I can tell you that Scott Keppel is outstanding to work with. He's a man that has a lot of integrity. So I just wanted to let you guys know that, and that was not solicited by him at all. So, I appreciate him, and he always works with my staff well. Calls me and any of my staff when there's an opportunity for the county to take advantage of something. So he seems like he always has his finger on the pulse of things. So he's a good guy.
County clerk and recorder, Ms. Gillette, how are you? Keeping busy?
I should say, like, I'm at home finally. I'm always here. My revenue report is in the packet. Is anybody interested in any election information?
Yes.
So we did open up our early voting sites a week earlier than we have in the past, and we added the Oswego Library Montgomery campus. So as of this morning, we had 2,900 voters go to vote at the Oswego Village Hall, 1,650 voters at the Oswego Library, Montgomery Campus, and yesterday was the first day for Plano, and they had 126. I don't know that they have had 126 ever in the entire early voting period, so that's a big number for them. At the county office building, we've done 4,074 early voters with 59 grace period, and grace period is where you register and vote at this on the same day. So we're very busy with early voting, and then the vote by mail statistics, we have issued 20,287 vote by mail ballots. We've returned and accepted 8,785. I do want to point out that there is a drop box outside the county office building at 111 West Fox Street on the north side of the building. The certification envelopes need to be sealed, signed, sealed, and dated. Okay, those are the main things. Fill out as much as you can on the certification envelope. That is the official document that says that you are the one that completed the ballot. You are the one that is returning the ballot. You completed it. It's sealed. No one else did it. So that's what our judges are looking for. They are looking to make sure it is signed and sealed. Okay, and if you don't want to come in, there is the drop box. Let's see. There's a lot going on. I'm trying to think. Questions?
What's the last day someone can request a vote-by-mail ballot?
The last day that we can mail a vote-by-mail ballot is October 29th. Therefore, we would need to have that paperwork in our hands before that if we are to get it in the mail on October 29th. They have to be postmarked by November 3rd or put in our drop box by 7 p.m. on the 3rd.
What happens if somebody puts their ballot in the drop box but doesn't do both envelopes? They just do one envelope.
If they just do the certification envelope, as long as it's signed, sealed, and dated, that's fine. It's just a little more work on our end because the outer envelope has a barcode on it.
Okay.
That helps us pull up the voter faster.
Okay. Thank you.
I got an email earlier this week from a constituent who was having trouble understanding the voting reports because there was no legend on the output. Can we include a legend for them about what all those abbreviations mean? I know, it's not easy, but that would probably...
Not easy. It's just find the, you know,
the time.
Everything takes time, and we've got a lot going on, and I mean... I do my best.
I tracked my vote that I dropped in the ballot box, and you guys were very lickety-splickety. I have to say it was posted and valid and counted and all of that. That was great. I myself actually struggled with what you're calling the certification envelope, which is the additional white envelope that's included for you to fold your ballot, put it in there, seal it. Because the language at the top was very strange and archaic, I really struggled with that and was unable to find an online resource to help me fill that out. So it sounds like what you're saying, though, is that we just need to sign and date the bottom part where it's asking for our signature and the date there. And if we were going to fill out the top, what does that language mean? It's really weird.
Well, that's language from the state.
I know. Can you explain that strange language from the state?
That's just making sure you know your name, you know your address, you know the election date. The thing that is tying people up is the ballot code, which is the ballot style on the front of your ballot, and the precinct that you're in, which is also on your ballot. That's the main things that are hooking people up. And that's just to make sure that you are the one that filled out your ballot. You know, that is your ballot. We don't want anybody else filling out your ballot and trying to send it in. So those are just things that we look at to make sure that you are the one that actually is submitting your ballot.
The thing that threw me off was there was some weird language about these many months or weeks of living there.
So you live at your house for how many months? So if you lived in your house for 10 years and you multiply it by 12 months, that's
literally what they're looking for, is the length of time you've lived at your current address that you're registered to vote in months. So odd. So just to clarify, everybody needs to put their ballot in the white envelope that was mailed to them, seal that. It has to be sealed, and then for sure, at a bare minimum, sign it and date it at the bottom as required.
Right. There are things on there that you can fill out. Your name, live at, whatever, your address is. So I know that there's a couple things that are hanging people up, but we're doing it. We're fielding lots of phone calls. There is stuff available on our website to help voters.
Well, that's what I was thinking about with the legend, too, because I'm like, he can't be the only one that's struggling. So maybe that would get rid of a couple of phone calls for you. Thank you.
Debbie, I have a couple of questions. So help me with knowing how the process is with the mail-in ballots. You said you were going to have to need a three-person committee, inspection committee. Have you chosen those three people, or where did those three people come from? Who does that? And when you get a mail-in ballot, do you then open it right away, or all of those mail-in ballots opened on Election Day? I mean, how does that process work? And the other question is, how long, or do you have any idea how long after the election is done, how long it will be before you clarify certify that it's indeed over and everything's been counted? Do you have kind of an indication? I don't know if that's coming from the state at all. So that's
the question. Well, you had a lot of questions. So the first question, the panel of three judges, that is all set in the Public Act. The Public Act that created all this vote-by-mail hoopla specifies that we need to appoint a panel of three judges, two from one party, one from the other party, to review the vote-by-mail ballots when they come back. The Democratic chairman presented us with a list of individuals that are willing to do that, and we reached out to other judges that have served as election judges in the past to ask them if they would be interested. They provided us with their schedule. We set up a schedule. We have a crew of three coming in the morning and a crew of three coming in the afternoon every day since September 28th. Okay. And they open up the ballots and they check the signatures twice a day, every day.
So they're party affiliated. So there's either two Republicans, two Democrats. It just depends.
Two Republicans, one Democrat.
Each time?
Two Republicans, one Democrat, two Democrats, one Republican, yes, each time.
Okay.
Each set of three. So three in the morning, and there's a different three in the afternoon.
And so the mail-in ballots are already, they're being opened and looked at by those three inspection?
Envelopes are being opened, and signatures are being reviewed by those judges.
But not counted?
Nothing can be counted. Early voting, no vote by mail can be counted until after 7 p.m. on election day.
Okay. So that process is they only see the signature, they don't see the ballot itself?
Correct.
Okay.
They don't see what any individual has voted.
Okay.
Unless the person forgot to put it in an envelope.
So, and then the other half of that is, do you have any idea of when you think that the, with all of the mail-in ballots and everything else, when that election will be certified?
We certify the election 21 days after the election. We have to wait 14 days for all the vote by mails to clear the mail. So after the election, we have to wait 14 days, and anything that comes through that's postmarked November 3rd, we have to accept.
Okay.
And then we certify our results 21 days after that. I don't even know the date. Something.
After
the election is when we certify the results to the state.
It's like the 24th.
Okay.
But you'll be reporting the results on the website like we do every election cycle.
On election night, we are planning on putting the early voting and vote by mail in first, and then precincts will come after that like we normally do.
Okay.
I would expect those results, the first results, to be a little bit later. Yeah. Because we have a whole nother early voting center that we have to account for. Okay. Well, do you have one more question? I don't remember.
No, I think that was it. It was just that they're just verifying the signatures, and then the night of the election, then you're going to go process the ballots through that counts, you know, who they voted for, basically.
We're going to run the totals, yes, right, after 7 p.m. on election night.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Ms. Hendricks.
I just wanted to make a clarifying point. In order to invalidate a signature, it needs to be a unanimous decision by all three judges. So a ballot cannot be invalidated if one judge thinks it is a valid signature, correct? Right. And the other thing I wanted to point out so that people are aware is that if there was a problem with your mail-in ballot, the clerk's office will be sending you a notice of that to provide you the opportunity within a certain time frame to rectify any issues that might be with your ballot. So if you see something coming in the mail to you from Ms. Gillette's office, you should pay attention.
Judges are actually the ones that are sending out the letters.
So the judges would be sending it.
Yes.
Either way, it's important to check your mail and open that and see what's in there so you can be sure that your ballot was valid and counted.
Debbie, not that this would ever happen, but can you explain how you would make sure the person cannot vote twice? In other words, by mail and then show up at the poll.
Our system only allows us to issue you one ballot, so there are a lot of people that have vote-by-mail ballots, 20,000 of them that have vote-by-mail ballots out there. If they went into our early voting site and we pulled them up, it would come up with a message that voter has received a vote-by-mail ballot, and we can't move forward with that. We cannot issue them another ballot until that status is cleared. So our system, you only get one. Don't throw it away. Don't rip it up.
Okay.
Has that happened yet?
Yeah.
Ms. Hendricks.
So the process is if they got a vote-by-mail ballot and they've decided that they want to vote in person either early or the day of the election, they need to bring that entirety of their mail-in ballot, everything that was included with it, to the polling place so that their ballot can then be converted from a mail ballot to an in-person ballot. Is that correct?
Render their ballot if they want to vote early or on election day. The judge will take that. They will make a phone call to our office so that we can go in and unrelease them.
So I would just like to encourage everyone that's sent out for a mail-in ballot to either mail it back in time or drop it in a ballot box, because this is the kind of thing that takes up a lot of time and creates a lot of issues on election day. So if you want to change your mind, please come early. Otherwise, please just send back your mail-in ballot. It makes election day much easier for everyone involved. Thank you.
Debbie, anything else?
I don't think so.
How's the recordings going?
I don't know. They're still coming to work.
Yeah. I was going to say. Treasurer. No treasurer today? Clerk of the court. Shocked. No clerk of the court. State's attorney.
Just a couple things real quick. Number one, I do want to give Debbie some kudos. We work obviously very closely with Debbie's office. She's been getting inundated over and over and over again with questions. some of which were covered here today. Please remember, Debbie didn't create this election cycle. She didn't create some of the issues that are out there. These are questions that have been created by the state. They are constant throughout the state. It's not her fault. It's not her doing. She didn't create the process. She's trying to deal with it for the first time during a pandemic as well. So please be patient with some of the things. I know that there are people, I want to kind of echo what Ms. Hendricks just said. On election day, it's going to be very busy. If you decided to request a vote-by-mail ballot and think you're going to walk in with it and immediately get to vote because you didn't vote with it ahead of time, there is going to be a lengthy delay. I want to warn people of that, because if you show up and think you're just going to go and it's going to be a five-second process, it's not. And I know that this is new for everybody. We're trying to get the word out there. Debbie is doing press releases. She is putting stuff on her website. She is trying to get that information out there. Obviously, we know the ramifications on election day if things aren't going smoothly. You know, we have our stuff prepared from our office, but trying to make the process streamlined is, if you request the mail-in ballot, please make sure you've done something with that mail-in ballot prior to election day. Because we know people are going to show up saying, but I want to vote in person. And that's going to create delays in staffing. There's only so many people in her office, and she's doing a phenomenal job trying to get all this done for the first time in the history of how many people have requested these and the different rules and regulations that have been imposed on her and have never been tried before. So please understand, I'm not trying to wave a flag for Debbie, but she's doing, and her staff is doing a phenomenal job given the newness of all this election process. So, and we'll continue obviously to help her with that. From our end, we've been working, things haven't slowed down. I wanna thank the sheriff's office. They just worked a major case last Friday. We've been focused on the election and obviously rightfully so, but some of the work that they're doing over there, some of those detectives are in my office. Just absolutely horrific case from the weekend. Knowing that those type of things and those officers and detectives are working those type of cases, hats off to them, Dwight and Bobby, for the work that they do. It even makes me cringe when I look at it. So some very good work, and that's just one of many that have been coming through. So we've been busy. We'll continue to be working with things with Debbie. So if other things are slowing down a little bit in our office, please understand why. We literally have all three of our civil assistants working dealing with election issues as they come forward, because that is the priority right now. So I understand the IDPH agreement. We will work on that as fast as we can, but I have a limited staff as well, and we'll get to those as fast as we can get to them. November 3rd is our target date, that hopefully things after that will start to go back to normal for us, but that's the priority right now given the turnaround time. So any questions? I'm happy to answer.
Are the questions that you're getting, you said the entire civil staff is dedicated to the election right now, primarily from the clerk's office or other parties? Or
I'll let Debbie, if you want me to answer that question, since I do have an attorney-client privilege with you. I can generally just say that there are questions regarding the procedures. We have implemented a process with Debbie's permission that if we're not responding to rumors, we're not responding to third party heard something about something about something, it's going to have to be witnessed by that person to make the complaint. Too often we hear, well, my friend told me that they went there and they heard that this happened. We can't chase a ghost. It just doesn't work that way. We don't do that in other cases. We're not going to do it here. If a specific voter, a specific poll watcher, a specific individual witnesses something that they think is an issue, they are the ones that need to bring that to us. We have a complaint system, a form that they can fill out. Then we can contact that person directly to see what the validity or non-validity of that issue is and address it if it needs to be addressed right away. Trying to track down four different individuals that heard something is just not practical from our standpoint. We just can't do it. Debbie's office can't do it, and it makes it too difficult. By the time we get to it, we realize, well, that's really not what happened, and we just wasted 2-3 hours of our time.
Ms. Hessage?
So just to talk about that for a minute, I get that obviously when something happens and it's hearsay or whatever, you can't go, like you said, chasing after every rumor. But at what point, when you hear it over and over and over again, possibly kind of the same thing from different people, not just maybe the same person or the same few people. At what point do you then talk to Debbie or whatever and say, okay, something's wrong, we don't know what it is, but can we, are we taking actions to at least address the situation that keeps coming up? Or is it that you just, if there's no evidence from the person, that direct person, then you can't do anything about it?
We would require, if there's that many people, then somebody should be able to give us a direct name who's actually witnessed it. So again, if you're hearing from five people, I would encourage those five people to report that to either Debbie or to our office about doing that, so we can speak to that person directly about what they witnessed, not what they're telling you that they witnessed. Because a lot of times we hear the, well, I heard it was this, and it was this, and it was that, and they were talking, and then all of a sudden when we get to the specifics, it's not exactly what it was. Mm-hmm. So talking to you wouldn't be very beneficial. We need to talk to that individual directly.
Okay.
Thank you. Coroner, Ms. Purcell. Good morning.
I did report just last week to LJL, so my report was given last week, and the report is in the packet, but there are just a couple of things I'd like to point out if I could. You'll see under the pending deaths, there was a probable overdose that has since come back as confirmed an overdose with our toxicology reports. I think what's important to point that out, though, is if you look at our accidental deaths, now that'll go up. The pending in one will go up to that accidental death, but that'll show fiscal year to date as 15 then. And if you look at September of last year, we had six. Our overdose deaths are reported in the manner of accidental deaths, and so they are quite a bit on the rise this year. If you look at, and that's not all of them. I mean, some of those are car accidents, but the majority of those accidental deaths are going to be our overdose deaths. And so 15 compared to 6 at the same time is quite a significant increase over the past year. And also, if you look at our fiscal year to date, we've had 332 deaths through the end of September, and at the same time last year we had 250. So it's 82 deaths overall higher in our office. So we're just seeing an increase in the number of deaths and the number of non-natural deaths. So those are just a couple of things I'd like to point out.
Oh, Ms. Vickers.
If someone overdoses and they're taken to a hospital outside of the county and they die there, does that get recorded on our numbers or the
county's? It's always where the person is pronounced dead. So even if something happens here, if they go to Copley, it becomes a King County coroner case, and it gets reported to them.
So are
these numbers are only in our county.
So we probably have a bigger problem.
Definitely. Yeah, and sometimes I'll get the case numbers from Kane County to see how many of deaths are happening in their hospitals that are being transported out of Kendall. But I would have to do that for, I mean, if somebody's transported to Chicago, if somebody's transported to Morris, if somebody's transported down to Valley West on the west side of the county, you know, I mean, it's just, I'd have to search a lot of different counties to be able to get those real accurate numbers like that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Health Department, Rayanne.
And this will be quick. Of course, it's COVID related. I just want to bring your attention to a joint public service announcement that's going to go out later today that I worked on with Chairman Greider as well as Scott Koppel. And I'm going to just read a couple excerpts because we know that the COVID activity in Kendall County is on the rise and trending in the wrong direction, which could trigger additional mitigation measures to combat a resurgence of COVID-19. Residents are strongly encouraged to follow personal protective measures and stay home from work if you are sick. As weather turns colder, people begin to gather indoors. There is more of an opportunity for community spread. We know that this virus spreads rapidly and isn't forgiving, especially indoors. We understand people are feeling tired, but we can't let our guard down. We must remain focused on working together as a community to slow the spread of the virus and keep our friends, loved ones, and neighbors safe. That's just a couple of excerpts from what's going to happen or what's going to come out later today, but I just want to thank you, Chairman Greider, and Scott for reviewing this and really putting out the joint message as we come together as a community to really fight COVID.
Thanks, Rand. Ms. Hendricks?
7-day rolling average in Kendall County?
I don't know that offhand.
It's 9. It was published on the state website. So here's my point. We need everybody in this county. If you care about your community and the businesses and our local economy and our schools, I am begging you to please properly wear a mask everywhere you go. Because we're starting to discover now that one of the biggest vectors of spread is actually family gatherings. I know that this isn't fun, but it's not about whether or not you think it's fun. It's about whether or not you think it's worth protecting your fellow community members from the deadliest pandemic to hit this country in 100 years. Please, we're trying to save businesses and lives and education and sports. And there's nothing as simple as putting a mask on. Like, of all the things that Americans have been asked to endure throughout history to save America, strapping a piece of cloth on your face seems relatively minimal and hardly a sacrifice. So please, I don't want to see us get shut down again. I certainly don't want to hear about any more excess deaths. I would like for our community to emerge from this whole. And it's not right now. We're going very much in the wrong direction. And everyone who hears this, please, everyone, I don't know about anybody else. I'm not too proud to beg. I'm begging you. I am begging you, everyone, to properly wear a mask everywhere you go. Thank you.
Supervisor of Assessments, I didn't see Andy. Go ahead, Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I believe Andy's out of the office, but I had a quick update from EMA, if that's all right. Roger is busy working on our updated plan, but he wanted to make everybody aware that Saturday there were some field fires that started in Morris and moved into the Lisbon Fire District and then to Newark. Very high winds fed the fires, including 3 field fires around Newark. Only one small farm implement was damaged near Lisbon on White Willow Road, a bigger fire destroying an outbuilding. The fire was out of control, and the fire department's on the scene. Local farmers used tractors to dig a fire line to stop it. Responding fire departments were from as far away as Orland Park. So I know this is something, you know, wildfires and that you don't hear about typically. You know, you don't think of that as Illinois, Central Illinois type of a problem. But with the lack of rain that we've had recently, just, you know, please pay attention if you do hear that or heed those warnings, because it is an issue we can experience when there's not a lot of rain.
Asked Roger if that was a new warning because of the wildfires, because I don't remember having the fire warning pop up on, you know, our alerts in the past, and then lo and behold, we had this issue on Saturday afternoon. So the lesson there is if you have gusty winds, don't have a, you know, bonfire. Thank you, Scott, for that. Standing committee reports. Admin HR, are you the vice?
Chairman, I'd like to make a motion for the approval of a renewal of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois insurance with 5 different options and the performance formulary drug plan.
Motion by Prochaska.
Second.
By Sesich. Mr. Keppel.
We do have Beth Ishmael on the phone from the Horton Group to discuss the plan and the updates today. The information is quite lengthy. It starts on page 63 of your packet.
Overview?
Yeah, Beth, are you available to give a brief overview? Yeah, I think you're muted.
Yes, I'm here. What will you be putting it on the screen? Do you need me to pull something up?
Well, if you could just give an overview of the renewal and any changes from last year to next year, or this year to next year.
Sure, no problem. Initially, the renewal came in, and I apologize. Let me get this up for myself here. Okay. apologize, Scott. I had the consolidated thing in, so I don't have everything exactly in front of me.
All right, board members, any questions on this item?
We're wanting specific changes.
Yeah, so one of the specific changes would be that we'd offer more alternative plans this year. It was discussed at the and recommended by the HR Admin Committee and Horton as well. The additional plans, one would be have a more narrow network, but would be at a lower cost. So we're trying to just give the employees different options of things they could pick. The standard plan, per se, which is the high deductible health savings plan that has the initial HSA plan that comes along with it, it remains pretty much unchanged with the exception of the performance formulary drug plan, which was also recommended by the committee. The big change on that plan is that it's something that's recommended by Horton and Blue Cross Blue Shield. The formulary drug plan limits the drugs that are allowed to a specific list that is recommended by Blue Cross. They try to do not only the best price on medications, but they also look to have it the best drug, the best performing drugs that they have. There is always a drug for a condition included in this plan, and the but there may be some disruption to some employees. The number is under 10% that would be disrupted in this year when we put it in. There comes a small savings to our renewal because of this, and it's really a future protection as more and more medicines come out. And this drug plan is very common. If we had less than 150 or less employees, we would be on this whether we liked it or not. So this comes before you. It was recommended 4-1 from the HR Admin Committee. It doesn't come without some risk. Whenever we make any changes to the health insurance, there because it's lined up in our union contracts, there is some risk to the board that there would be a grievance or something could come because of that. However, the earlier we make this change to the formulary drug plan, the more it can protect our costs in the future, and the less impact it will have on employees. I ask our representatives to look for ways that we can try to control the costs going forward, because that's always around budget time one of the biggest numbers that we get. However, it's impossible to really control costs without having some type of change or disruption. So this is definitely a decision that is before the board today to make about this renewal.
And I apologize, Scott, I do have it pulled up now, so forgive me for that. The change, like Scott said, would include a drug, a medication for every ill. Some of the impacted members would have to have a conversation with their provider. The team at Horton is available to help them through that process. And we can help them with any processing of any appeals that might be necessary as well, in the event that the medication adjustment is something that they need to appeal for a decision with Blue Cross on.
And I'd like to follow up with what Horton has been saying. This would, when they say formulary, if there is another type of drug that is available with a similar formula, such as a generic, Horton will try to push, and the Blue Cross Blue Shield will try to push the generic. However, if the doctor says this is the type of drug you need, they are available for appeals, and we did discuss the appeals process at length at HR Admin Committee, and we found that the answers that Horton gave us were just very, very satisfactory. And then if you look at page 82 of the packet, it looks like this. It has all of the five plans that we are offering. The three plans from last year, the HMO, the high deductible HSA, and our normal HSA are all included. The HMO is the most cost-effective plan for the county. We did also include two Blue Choice Options HSAs, which are very similar to both of our HSAs. The only difference is there is a slightly smaller network, and the people on that plan will be able to save some money every month on that by choosing the Blue Choice Options. They do retain the option to go to the full PPO network, however. It would just cost a little bit extra.
So remind me, because I think I had asked this before, what was the percentage of our employees that it would affect, and is it affecting them adversely as far as the drug that they are currently on would no longer be covered? Is it something that if suddenly their doctors cannot work with them on a different drug, then what happens in those situations? Do we know?
The way it works is, and on some of these are that they're getting a prescription for a drug that is now over-the-counter available, so they could still possibly get it. They would just need to purchase it over-the-counter. And that's typical on a lot of drug plans, but just doesn't happen to be on ours. There are some where it would be, you'd get forced to generic, as Member Prochaska said. And there are some where they're, like, for example, asthma. If you have one inhaler, there might be another with a very similar formula, but it's made by a different company that would be covered, and your old one would not. So we're going to be sending out communications both from our end at the county, and then anybody that would be disrupted would get a letter from Blue Cross Blue Shield or Horton ahead of that to say, you know, you need to speak with your doctor, because the intent is that, you know, unless people just completely avoid all communications, that you'd walk into the pharmacy on January 1st and find out that there's a problem. So we will be attempting to communicate with everybody that would be affected to make sure that they have plenty of time ahead of time to talk to their doctor. And then also we have representatives at Horton that can help to smoothly transition this for people. And then, as Matthew mentioned, if your doctor is insistent that this is really the only option for you, you can look at the appeals process, and Horton will assist any employees that wish to go down that road as well. And the appeal would be to Blue Cross.
So what's the percentage of this affecting?
9%.
9%. How many employees is that?
It's about 51 members. So the reports are generated on headcount on your health plan, not specifically employees.
Okay.
Vickers?
Last year I was a hard no on this because I've been in that situation where we personally, and it was a challenge to do the appeal. But last year we were at 6% of our employees, and this year we're at 9%. And Horton believes, and certainly the research I've done have shown, that this is the direction that the industry is going. So the longer we wait, the more employees that will be impacted. And we may not have a choice. You know, it may be something that we're forced to do eventually. So I changed my mind this year because I'd rather do it while fewer employees are impacted. So just wanted to add that.
Mr. Prochaska.
And at the HR admin meeting, Beth Ishmael did tell us a scenario where there was a person that was blind and they needed a very specific
insulin pump.
Yes, a very specific insulin pump that would actually verbally say the type of what it is, because they couldn't, obviously you can't read a readout. That originally was declined. They worked with the insurance company, and the insurance company did agree. And so that is an example of, yes, the insurance company actually does listen to the appeals.
And if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to add, a lot of times when members get us involved, it's so that we can put together a three-way call between themselves, ourselves, and their doctor to talk about the letter they received and to discuss the options they have. Sometimes members are a little bit nervous with that letter and they don't know where to start. And that's where our team can step in and help them make that call with the doctor to see what their options are and see if we need to move forward with an appeal. And then we'll help coordinate that appeal, pull together all the paperwork, because an appeal process is not totally known by a member on how to do it and how to get it done the most efficient and quick way, so that our team can help do that as well.
Matters.
Beth, I had a couple of questions for you. Does the list of covered prescriptions cover the list that we're currently providing to employees? In other words, are all the prescriptions that we had to fill last year, are all of those drugs on the current formulary?
So every condition for treating, every medication for treating a condition has a medication on the list. There's impact because some of what people are taking today aren't the most cost effective or efficient for treating that condition. And that's where this performance drug list is going to kind of call those pieces out, generate the letters where there's impact to members, and kind of force a conversation with their doctor to see if that's still the appropriate medicine for them to take.
What happens if an appeals process goes through and the end result ultimately is that that is rejected? That person is paying out of pocket for the prescription their doctor had then prescribed?
Yeah, that's correct. If an appeal goes to the end and it is rejected by the insurance company, by Prime Therapeutics and Blue Cross, then that's considered a non-covered medication by the plan. So it would be, if the person continued to take that, they would have to pay out of pocket for it.
So the insurance company is writing the rules of what drugs they will cover, and they are also writing the rules of what circumstances they will cover drugs, and they are the one that has the final say in the appeal. Is that correct?
They're running the plan and governing the plan, but they will work with the doctor directly, and there will be, through the appeals process, there are different, sometimes it gets to a peer-to-peer review where the doctor has a conversation with a provider or a doctor at the insurance company or at the pharmacy benefit manager, which is Prime Therapeutics.
I just want to make something perfectly clear. It's a yes or no question. So the insurance company is coming up with the list. The insurance company makes the decision on the appeal, and the insurance company is writing the rules of the appeal. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Ms. Hassage.
Oh, in essence, the insurance company is dictating your health care, not your doctor. So what, Beth, can you tell me, and I think you said it, and I may have missed it because I was going to ask this question, are there doctors on that appeal panel, that process, or is it just insurance people?
No, it goes through a doctor process as well. So like I was saying earlier, it could get to a point to where they do a peer-to-peer review, and the member's doctor speaks directly with the provider, the pharmacy benefit manager as well, and they discuss the situation and then come to a conclusion.
Okay, thank you.
If I can just add, I think this by Scott, a drug list that all fully insured businesses under 150 employees are already on with Blue Cross. They've been on it for a couple years. It was a mandated requirement. Because Kendall County is of size, you are able to customize your plan. So when we switched the insurance back to Blue Cross a couple years ago, we implemented the enhanced drug list, and that's what you're on today. And this is just an option for a way for cost containment and to help drive to the most efficient and effective medications. And others around you in Blue Cross's book of business to employees to 150, it's automatic. They don't have the option anymore of the enhanced drug list. Everybody's on the performance drug list. And your HMO plan already is part of the performance drug list because it is mandated on HMOs.
Okay.
So it's not new, and it has been working well for most employers. When it was mandated and changed on all fully insured groups under 150, we did not hear a lot of disruption from that. We helped employees through the process of the change, and there were calls, definitely extra calls, because people got letters and had questions. But everybody eventually found a place under the new drug list, and we did not get as many calls as we had initially anticipated it might drive.
Interesting.
I guess what rubs me wrong is the party most interested in profits is the party who also has all of the power in that decision making. And on principle alone, I don't think I like that. It's not doctors making the decision. It's corporate insurance people who have a fiduciary responsibility to deliver a profit who aren't working in your interest. It's in their interest to deny that claim. So I don't know how comfortable I am with this on principle.
I call the question, please.
Kellogg. All right, roll call.
Kellogg.
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska.
Yes.
Ms. Vickers.
Yes.
Ms. Sessage.
Yes.
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 Yes. Motion carries 7-1. Thank you.
Yep.
Friend, I'd like to make a motion for the renewal of Blue Cross Blue Shield for life insurance, iMed for vision insurance, and MetLife for dental insurance.
Second.
By Prochaska, seconded by Kellogg. Mr. Keppel.
This one's a lot easier. We're not changing any providers. There were some small increases in the lines that we expected. One of the big ones is that we need to stick with Blue Cross for life insurance because it gives us a discount on our health insurance, which far outweighs any change in price or other options that are made available. The employees, by and large, are happy with MetLife for dental, so the decision and recommendation from the committee was to keep us with MetLife. They have given us a pretty good rate and a guarantee of a modest increase for next year.
Thank you. Any questions? Roll call.
Mr. Prochaska? Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sussman?
Yes.
Mr. Naylor?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Yes.
All ayes. The motion carries. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion for the approval of MetroNet P2P fiber connection from main campus to county office building and highway at a cost not to exceed $18,600.
Motion by Prochaska, seconded by Kellogg. And what do we consider main campus? I'd constitute the COB as the main campus.
It's between John Street and Fox, so okay. The health department building and the county office building.
Wait, say it again.
So there's two connections. There's one between.
It doesn't include the jail or the courthouse.
They're all connected by fiber we own.
Okay.
So that entire government center, campus, courthouse, health department, sheriff's office, and now facilities and animal control. There's fiber optic ring out there that we own. The intent of this is to connect our highway department, this campus that we're on currently, and then the government center campus with the courthouse. It connects between the buildings. Right now we use wireless point to point. And as we move to a new phone system, we want redundancy between the connections because it will rely on data network to have our phone calls between each other. And also the reliance on the Tyler system for all of the offices and connecting to get to that, we want to have improved and more efficient connections for that reason.
Thank you. Questions?
Roll call. Matt Kinsey is on the phone if there's additional questions.
Roll call.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sussman?
Yes.
Mr. Naylor?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Grader?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
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 Motion carries. All ayes. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion for the approval of the GIS cadastral analyst job description.
Motion by Prochaska, seconded by Kellogg. This is one that we didn't get to at Cal.
Correct. This was on the Cal agenda for discussion. Megan and Matt Kinsey are both on the line to discuss this as well. They came to me a couple months ago and said that Josh Carlson, one of our GIS employees, was doing things above and beyond his current job description significantly. When everything was moved to the cloud, Josh handles the upgrades to the systems in the cloud and many, many more things that were outside of his original job description. I told them, bring it to the finance committee during your hearing and ask for him to have a larger raise and then also bring all the changes to his job. The new, in your packet starting on page 95, the new duties that Josh is taking on are highlighted. And this is contained inside of the GIS fees. This is outside of the general fund. All costs for employees are paid for with those fees, including this. For Josh and the work that he brings, one thing he does do that other GIS people might not be able to do as part of this job is take weight for server management off of Daryl and Matt Kinsey, freeing up time for them to work on other things. In addition, I know at the last meeting there was some discussion at the stormwater hearing about issues with topographical information, and Megan can talk a little bit to that, but they found free 2018 topographical information, and then Josh was key in already creating a new map to allow for comparisons between 2010 and 2018. That's one of the things that he does and was able to turn around very quickly. So happy to answer any questions about this, but this would be the new job description going into effect immediately, and the raise would happen on December 1st.
Sussage?
Yes.
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
Ms.
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
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 Wise, thank you. Anything else, Mr. Prochaska?
Not under admin.
All right, well, we'll keep it with you. I'll give you a little break here. Next up, highway. May I have a motion to approve phase 3 construction engineering services agreement between Kendall County and HR Green for project management of the El Domain Road contract B construction in an amount not to exceed $3,559,124. Sorry. Seconded by Prochaska. I'm sorry, Kellogg. Man, I'm losing it here.
I did the same thing.
Fran, do you want to talk about this exciting project that's about to come online finally? November 6th, I believe.
November 6th, letting for this project, and this is the agreement that will govern all of the construction, the documentation, and approvals by Illinois Department of Transportation. So yeah, pretty exciting time. We've been waiting for this for decades.
And so on November 6th, what exactly happens?
There'll be a bid opening in Springfield. Hopefully we'll have good competitive bids, and all indications are that we will get good competitive bids. There's a lot of interest right now because there's a little bit of a lull at the state level in some of the projects that are getting moved forward. So this is really a perfect time to get to a letting. Had a lot of interest already. Contractors are calling us, calling our consultant, asking questions about the project. So all indications are that we should get a good competitive bid.
And then we would expect construction to begin in the spring, potentially?
Yes.
That's great. Ms. Gilmore.
Fran, could you talk a little bit about the tree cutting that was done at the in the corridor?
And in an effort to mitigate, 30,000 new trees were planted. 32,000 new trees were planted.
That doesn't count the ones that were planted in Henneberry a couple years ago to mitigate for the Contract A construction. There were hundreds of trees planted over at Henneberry Forest Preserve on behalf of the El Domain tree mitigation as well. So lots of trees have been planted.
Yes.
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 Yes. Thank you. Go ahead, Fran.
I just want to take this opportunity to review all the nice things that were said about Mr. Kelly. I'm just kidding. Scott's been absolutely phenomenal, very supportive of the highway department. He's doing a great job.
Stafford Auto Parts and Recycling bid for 2001 Chevy van, the amount of $800, and for the 2007 Chevy Impala for the amount of $500.
Second.
Yes.
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 Yes. Ayes. Motion carries.
Second.
Motion by Kellogg, seconded by Hendricks.
Second.
Can we go up?
Oh, it was a typo?
Huh?
revenue than on here, as opposed to, it's not like we're... Yeah, correct. Tell me what you want to do. I don't care. Get rid of the thing. I made the motion. If anyone wants to second it, we can...
Second.
To increase the sale amount from $40 to $401 by Member Kellogg, seconded by Member Prochaska. Discussion on that? A roll call as to the motion increasing the amount of the sale from from $40 to $401. Roll call on that, please.
Mr. Kreider?
Yes.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
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 The motion to amend carries. Now for the full
motion to approve the Crispin Auto bid for the 1999 Ford Ranger in amount of $401. Is that right? $401 for the 2003 Ford F-150 in the amount of $759, and for the 2002 Chevy Silverado 2500 in the amount of $859. Roll call.
Ms. Hendricks?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Prochaska?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
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 Yes. All ayes. Motion carries. Thank you.
Second.
Like seconded by Gengler.
Discussed this through facilities a little bit, but then through finance we discussed this. The health department has a grant to facilitate part of this. I have 10,000 and some change. I don't know the exact number, but it came through the capital request through the emergency stream. If you know the flow chart, have it memorized like Mr. Smiley does. Basically, the card access at the health building is at failure mode. Had to do something with the significant backbone we've created with the Fox Street renovation project. That was put in there for this purpose, with the idea of doing this one later. And now, because we're doing it immediately, we need to put it in as a change order with light construction, as opposed to putting it in later as a separate item. May have affected the price upward a little bit, but as an emergency and short turnaround, the finance committee felt it was necessary, I believe, unless I speak out of turn for others.
So, Matt, I just wanted to clarify, the card access system is also for this building, the historic courthouse?
This is a separate, we have in the Fox Street renovation project that we approved, including the boardroom, the signage, and the security, the backbone of the card access system was in that project, in that number. This 27 is just for the Health and Human Services building.
Yeah.
There was card access in the original project for this location that we're sitting in today.
Right. Thank you.
Other comments? Roll call.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
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 All ayes. Motion carries. Thank you. Planning, Building, and Zoning, Mr. Prochaska.
Chairman, the first item is a correspondence from Chris Wilson regarding Ordinance 2020-09, formerly Petition 2012, pertaining to the approval of a plat of vacation, relocation, and expansion of a construction and drainage easement and drainage and utility easements on Lot 171 and 172 in Whitetail Ridge Subdivision. The Planning, Building, and Zoning Department received a letter from the petitioner letting us know that he no longer wishes to go through with the project and that ordinance will not come into effect.
Thank you.
Next item is an approval of a short-term rental registration form, and I'd like to make a motion for approval.
Second.
Motion by Prochaska, seconded by Hendricks. Mr. Prochaska.
Mr. Chairman, this item is a registration form for short-term rentals that brings us into compliance with our recently passed updates to our Kendall County zoning ordinance. This is primarily for properties in Kendall County that are doing Airbnbs and other short-term rentals such as that.
Any discussion on this? Roll call.
Yes.
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 All ayes. Motion carries. Thank you.
Law, Justice, and Legislation.
Oh, sorry. I thought you had something else on PBZ. Law, Justice, Legislation. Mr. Prochaska.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to enter into a 3-year agreement for services with the Sheriff app with an initial cost of $23,980 and an annual maintenance cost of $8,990.
Thank you. A motion by Prochaska.
Second.
Seconded by Sesich. And Mr. Richardson, do you want to talk about this? I know there are a couple of questions that came up on Thursday as well.
Yes, sir. A few of the questions that were asked during the COW. One of them was, are we able to view how many people have actually downloaded the app? And we absolutely are. It's updated every 24 hours. So it'll actually show us how many people downloaded on iOS versus Google Play, which is the Android version of the platform. Some other questions that were asked on how large has this program gotten? You know, these apps, are they, or is there a lot of people that download this app? You know, any information we have on that. And I did a little research, and actually Monroe County Sheriff's Office in Florida has this app, and it's very successful for them. To give you an idea, they're county population is about 73,000 people, and they have over 32,000 downloads of this app. They feel that it pushes out information way faster than it would if it was going to another social media platform that not everybody gets alerts on. This is something that's on their phone, and it regardless if they get an alert and a ding, or it just shows that they have a message on there, they're able to click on it and get instant feedback. It's something we feel that it can be used, you know, broadly throughout the county to push information out that may come from another source within the county, another office. But it is something that will be effective December 1st. They feel they can expedite the process, as Ms. Hendricks asked about how long it would take, and they're very confident that by December 1st that would be up and running and fully functional.
I already had them answered by Sheriff and Bobby. Thank you.
So, Bobby, just because when I was trying to talk about this with somebody else and they asked me specifically, so what does the app do? And I was like, well, I don't know. I guess you can report crimes. You can see what's happening in the county. And can you kind of generalize and summarize, like, when somebody downloads this, what will they be able to see? What will they be able to do? Are we interacting with the Sheriff's Office? I mean, how does that work with
it? Absolutely is, yes. So when you click on the app, it'll bring you to a home screen, basically, that's customizable, that we'll have the ability to put what we feel is important on there. Plus, as I spoke before, that if there's something that the public feels that they need more information on and we need to upgrade that home screen, that's something we absolutely can do. But
like a public service announcement? Are there specific things, like a robbery is in, you know, happening right now? I mean, is it something like that, or is that not?
It is. It's okay. It absolutely has the ability to have push notifications. So if, you know, there was an accident or a safety issue that needed to come out, weather that's coming through, I know that there are weather alerts that come through EMA, but we also have the ability to put that, push that out on the app.
Okay.
If they have concerns, questions about any of their loved ones that may be in custody at the sheriff's office within the jail, they want to put finances or money onto their commissary account to allow them to participate further in the tablet program or to get items off of commissary, they'll have the ability to do that. It'll also have you know, your standard public safety messages that we're trying to get out. Obviously, you know, the things that we've put out on Facebook in the past are COVID information, ways to handle, you know, cybercrime and things like that that we typically put out in a press release will also be given right on the app.
I spoke to our EMA director on Saturday during the brush fires, field fires that were occurring, and we talked about, you know, most people didn't even understand that there was this fire warning out there, and we mentioned this app and the discussion of being able to link in and warn people about it, just that many more people that we could allow to know what was going on, because those fires, a lot of them were started throughout the state by people burning brush who had no idea there was a problem or an issue that day. So another example of where we can get information like that out that protects our citizens. So.
Well, that's what I was thinking. So the brush fire would be an example, and then we've had a couple of big things here, I guess, in the last month. If there was a fugitive, would that be something else that you would push out potentially?
Absolutely. As if it won't take the place of Everbridge, but it'll supplement Everbridge, as I explained in the previous. Not everybody has a landline or has opted into Everbridge. When the fire came out, we had KenCom do a 5-mile radius to inform the people that, you know, this was happening, this was in progress, and, you know, to be on the lookout. It's something that we could also push at the same exact time, to push that out to the app to give people the awareness. Because maybe they're not, if they have a landline, maybe they're not home, and maybe that's the phone that's opted in, and they're not actually at home, they're out at the store. But they know coming back into that area that there's actually an active scene of some incident, i.e. the fire. Or they could contact a neighbor and say, hey, I have this instance going on. Could you help us out, even if they're not home and receiving that Everbridge call?
Ms. Hendricks?
I really like this idea, which I know you're tired of hearing me say, but I really like this idea. And I think at the end of the day, we have a 3-year time period where we can roll it out, use it, see how it works, reevaluate, and move on from there. But I think it's important. We've reached a point where we need to have more effective and complete communication with the community. And the brush fires example is the perfect example to show that. So I say we go for it.
Yes.
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 Carries all eyes. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make motion for the approval of an intergovernmental agreement between the County of Kendall and the County of Kane for juvenile detention services.
Motion by Prochaska, seconded by Hendricks. And this is the annual update.
Correct. There's some increases in the fees associated with it for the juvenile detention. This comes recommended from Judge Pilmer for approval.
Yes.
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 Eyes, thank you. Special committee reports, Mr. Prochaska, KenCom Executive Board.
Mr. Chairman, the KenCom Executive Board will meet this Thursday at 5:30. At that meeting, we will get the first reading of the final budget that will be voted on and approved in November.
Thank you. Oh, Ms. Gilmore.
Mr. Prochaska, we've heard a lot about the license plate readers that are being proposed. Is that still in the budget?
As of right now, it is still in the budget, though I anticipate a lot of discussion will be had on that subject at the Thursday meeting. I will give a comprehensive report to the board after that meeting.
Good. Thank you.
County organizations, Mr. Prochaska.
Mr. Chairman, the National Association of Counties is having their federal policy summit starting tomorrow. Registration is free and still open if any board members want to attend. They are more than welcome to. Subjects include COVID, health and human services, federal land, and broadband infrastructure will be some of the topics. And it goes from the 21st to the 22nd of October. The United Counties Council will be having its monthly meeting by Zoom the next Monday. Don't have the full agenda out on it, but they will have question and answer with UCCI's attorneys, Giffen, Winning, Cohen, and Bo Davies.
Mr. Keppel.
I have an update from CMAP. There was a meeting put together with the collar counties about economic development. CRGC is now defunct, so it came out of the Cook and Collar Chairs meeting, and I met with several economic development staff from the other counties and members of CMAP to start the discussions about regional economic development. It's very early in the discussions, but there seems to be, and Chicago is also, World Business Chicago is at the table. This was a meeting with staff to try to put something together to propose about how we can move together in the future as a region and to help heal after COVID-19. So just wanted to update the board that ongoing discussions continue because it's a very important topic.
That is the kind of question that, or the kind of discussions we've been having where everybody has, every county has some, is facing something right now, and You know, I mentioned our small businesses and you know, Cook County piped up right away and said that, you know, they've also got small businesses that, you know, are facing, you know, some really challenging times and that, you know, runs across the region as well. So thanks, Scott, for continuing to stay on top of those as well. Other business? Chairman's report. May I have a motion to approve Dr. John Gleason, Kendall County Board of Health, 3-year term, expiring October 2023.
Second.
Motion by Kellogg, seconded by Prochaska. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you. Public comment? Say your name for the record and you have 5 minutes.
Todd Miller in Yorkville. The Sheriff's app, the representative from the Sheriff's Office didn't really highlight, and I think it's kind of important, is that the funding source for that is the commissary account, and it's a creative use of that commissary account funds, which are funds raised from the inmates for candy bars and whatnot that get marked up, and anyway, that the profits go into that commissary fund. It's supposed to be used for the benefit of the inmates, with the ability to put money on their commissary account some other factors there that are included in that. We, the public, actually are benefiting and have the ability to have much better communication and notice with that app. So anyway, kudos to the Sheriff's Department for using that funding in a creative way.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Questions from the press?
Jim Wyman, WSPY. Mr. Chair, who is Dr. John Gleason replacing on the Health Department Board?
There is a vacancy as a result of John Palmer no longer residing in the county or practicing in the county. And so it's not, the seat's been open for a while, but he agreed to continue serving, and talking with the state's attorney felt that was acceptable for him until we found a replacement.
So Dr. Gleason is short-term?
No, Dr. Palmer was short term.
Okay.
Dr. Gleason's replacing.
And Dr. Palmer then now will be gone?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Just say your name for the record.
Hello.
Luke Robinson with the record. I just had a few questions. First, with the labor agreement with the Sheriff's Office, how many deputies does that apply to? Who would?
Is that Leslie or Bob?
Six sergeants, six corrections sergeants.
Okay. Great. And then what is the length was in there? What is the amount of the agreement?
It is a 5-year agreement. Effective December 1, 2019, the salary will be $91,788.22. Effective 12/1/20, starting in the summer, the amount will be $94,082.93. Effective 12/1/2021.
Great, thank you. And are there any changes to the benefit package in the agreement?
Pardon?
Are there any changes to the benefit package in the agreement?
Mm-hmm. There will be an increase in command pay. It will be increased from $2.25 an hour to $3 an hour. The health insurance will remain status quo. And most of the other terms will remain status quo with respect to the other.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And I also had just a few more about the Sheriff app. Can I address the gentleman behind
sure.
me? Who'd be okay? What does the Sheriff's Department have any sort of projection for how many downloads they would like to have by sort of this length of time?
We don't have a projection. Obviously, we're going to campaign to have as many as we can.
Mm-hmm.
There are no benchmarks at this point. We would like to see get to at least where our Facebook likes are at and our people that join us on Facebook over 19,000. So that's the plan, but we hope to exceed that.
Okay, great. And then I was looking into the app a little bit. Is there anything built into the app that prevents any sort of like abuse of it or kind of misreporting crime and kind of wasting resources?
So there will be several moderators of the app,
okay.
command staff level.
And my final question is about the, I'm a little murky on the details, I'm new, but the debris that's in some sort of river, is there any sort of movement on getting that out and who is paying for the removal of it?
Our Forest Preserve meeting.
Okay. Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about, the bridge?
Yes, exactly.
Are you our new records person, Luke?
Excuse me?
Are you our new record person?
Yes, I started yesterday.
Well, welcome.
Okay, thank you. Happy to be here. All right, thank you all.
Thank you. No further need for executive session? Motion to adjourn.
Oh, thank God.
Motion by Vickers, seconded by Gengler. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. We're adjourned.